Blog Talk Radio.
Inner Healers is a worldwide community of people who believe healing comes from the inside, as well as all the answers needed to live a happy, healthy life. As such, I set the Inner Healers Radio, an online talk show on alternative medicine, to provide life guidance and help people connect their emotions with their natural inner state of health. With this radio and the help of all our guests and callers, we hope to create a space for sharing our lights online. Listen to your favorite teachers, authors, psychologists, channelers, healers, psychics, music therapists, and more. Join show host, healer and founder of Inner Healers in Peru, Susana Stiglich, while she unravels each topic hand in hand with her wise guests. Many people around the world have improved their lives thanks to their sharing through the Inner Healers community. Join us for a joyful experience. Shows are recorded, so you can download each as a podcast to listen on your way to work or whenever needed.
Everybody, how are you doing today? Welcome to our Inner Healers Radio. My name is Luciana Stiglich, and I will be your host for today's show, Forgiving Sexual Abuse. Our wonderful guest for today is Karma Dillon. She's a wonderful author, and she's actually somebody very special who will share with us her wisdom that she has obtained from such an experience. Karma, are you there?
Yes, hello, and thank you very much for the opportunity to reach out to people all over the world and help them to heal from their sexual abuse past.
Welcome, welcome, and really, really thank you for being here. It's very important for us to have you here. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened with you?
Well, me personally, what happened was the first sexual abuse I experienced was at the age of 3. It happened from a male neighbor who was about 40 years old, and it only happened one time. And what I learned from that was that even though it only happened one time and I was so young, that experience marked my life very much. And it was a memory that I didn't want to have. It was like an image in my brain that I didn't want to have and a story in my head that I didn't like to have. And what happened with me is that my family, my parents, of course, reacted. They found out. The police found out I was too young to testify. And everybody just kind of swept it under the carpet and hoped that I was too young and it would just go away. And they never talked about it. And at age 12, I had a memory triggered by the smell of peanut butter. So I always hated peanut butter as a child, and that's kind of unusual. Most children like peanut butter, but nobody thought about it. And all of a sudden, at age 12, I just remembered why I hated peanut butter, and it was because he had offered me a peanut butter sandwich to get me to come into his house. And I was a very poor child, so I was probably hungry. So I told my mother that, and she was just shocked that I remembered that happened, and she asked me what I remembered, and I told her, and she was just, she couldn't believe that I remembered those details. So I do know that it happened to me, and I do know that it wasn't something that other people told me happened to me, because they never talked about it. And then I remembered and told them, and they and my mother verified it. So I'd like to talk and share with people about the fact that a sexual type of trauma doesn't have to be violent, and it doesn't have to be repeated. And also for parents who worry that their child might have been abused, I want them to know that, you know, not to panic, and, you know, there is healing and recovery. The second time I was abused sexually, I was 14, and actually several incidences of sexual abuse happened from 14 to 15 by older males, and who were forceful and manipulative and exploitive. And so, again, it wasn't like somebody grabbed me out of the bushes and raped me. And yet those events in my life affected very deeply all kinds of attitudes and judgments and feelings that impaired and influenced my personal relationships, my sexuality, my identity, the way I thought about myself and expressed myself. And they were memories that I did not like to have come up and didn't like to talk about. So those were the events that happened in my life. And there were no other events of sexual assault or abuse for me. However, because of all that, and because, you know, my sisters were also molested, and I have friends who have been victims of incest, and along the way in life, I've met many, many adults, men and women, who were subjected to sexual abuse of various kinds and degrees in their childhood, and so people have been very open with me about their own experience, and so I've had a lot of opportunities to have very open discussions with people who have had this kind of experience and who are, you know, working on recovering and healing and, you know, and just being able to be happily married and to be intimate and to be trusting and to be able to enjoy sex and feel comfortable with whatever, how we all want to express ourselves with sex and intimacy. So I'm really honored to have an opportunity to speak on this topic with the people who are going through this struggle right now.
Actually, we are honored to have you here because it's not something easy to talk about. You know, when we have difficult times in life, it's not something that we want to remember or that we want to share, at least on the radio. So,
yeah.
You know, so, I mean, you're not even looking at me and at my face. So I know it's a difficult thing for you to do, and I really, really appreciate it because, as I was telling you off air, we are a big community, we are growing, and many of us have gone through things like that, and it's not easy to go through that. So the idea for us is to learn from your experience, to receive actually your guidance, because nobody can know what it really is to go through something like that. You know, you can even talk about that, but we're not in your shoes. We're not feeling what you felt there. So in order to reach these people, I'd like to make you a few questions, if that's okay with you.
Yes.
Okay, so my first question has to do with the first event. You said that it happened when you was very little, and you remembered it when you were about 12. How did you feel then?
I remember at 12 feeling like a little shocked and not wanting to believe that it was real. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why I told my mother about it, because I didn't know if it was just something I'd made up in my head. You know.
Mm-hmm. But, so what did he do to talk to her? Did you have a good relationship with your mother?
Yes, I did. The unfortunate thing with this type of event is that, you know, parents really don't want these things to happen to their children. And so the parent feels guilty and has their own issues about it. And that also affects how we learn to cope with things. It's an interesting dynamic, because I remember as a child, as a three-year-old, I remember hearing my parents argue about what happened to Karma, and it's your fault, my dad, blaming my mother, the anger, the arguing in the next room. I remember that. I remember the impression I got of, and I was a very bright child, so, you know, I had a good grasp of language by that age, and I think I was actually closer to 4 years old than three, so, but I have a very strong impression of sensing that something very bad had happened to me, and I got the impression that I would never be the same, and I got the impression that my dad was very angry at my mom, it was her fault, that he felt it was her fault that she didn't watch me close enough. And when my parents' marriage fell apart a couple of years later, and it had, of course, nothing to do with that, but in my mind, as a five-year-old losing her daddy, because he abandoned us, I believed that it was my fault. I have a memory of feeling melancholy and feeling like it's my fault and everybody's mad at me, because deep inside of me there was an impression of Karma is a bad little girl. That was the bottom line I got out of that experience, and I was afraid that if anybody ever found out what a bad little girl I was, they wouldn't love me anymore. And that was basically the whole driving force of my life growing up. You know, so when I told my mother that and told her that I was afraid that if she found out what was in my head, that she would not love me anymore. And it's a strong thing. It's like if I, you know, it's a very complicated thing, because and I've talked to rape victims and I've read about rape victims, and the problem is that the nerves of the body do what nerves do. The nerves have no discrimination or judgment or preference. If the nerves are stimulated in a way that produces pleasure, then you experience pleasure. And a lot of times, rape victims really struggle with the fact that it so-called felt good. And I don't like to say that what he did felt good, but of course the nerves were like going, oh, what nerves do. That doesn't mean that he should have, that it was okay what he did, or that it's not a problem, or that it's no big deal if adults, you know, sexualize children. There are many, many big problems with that, and I have taken a stand about making the pedophiles understand that they are robbing children of their identity when they do that. They are not doing, it isn't loving them. And so that's something I really want to educate the world about. But go ahead and ask another question. I don't want to get too off track. We're talking about forgiveness here.
Yes, I know, but you were saying that, and I was remembering some cases that I've had on the therapy room when we work about this, and some of the things that usually an abuser does is, first of all, look for children, but that's because they have this control power. Actually, abuse generally has to do with control rather than sex. So the role of the abuser is to keep you under control, so that you do feel powerless. And in the end, you do feel like you've lost your self-love. And the more you try to set free from that person, this abuser actually gets stronger. Mm-hmm. So the more in control that he or she is, the more devastated the victim feels. So it's very interesting what you're saying, because many abusers say that, well, this person was really enjoying it, or this person provoked me, mm-hmm. you know, and that's because in their heads they feel like this is the way that they can regain control over the situations that are around them. But it's really not the case, you know. People are not, or children are not calling their attention, are not provoking them,
yeah.
and are really not enjoying it as it should be enjoyed, you know, because a sexual relationship is something sacred.
Oh, it's very confusing for children.
I know. Yeah.
I remember being very confused as a child, just like, he's not supposed to be doing this, I don't understand this. No other adult had ever behaved that way with me. No other person had ever behaved that way with me. And it was very confusing, and it didn't feel right, and I didn't want to, and I was scared. I didn't know what to do. I was just scared, you know.
Mm-hmm. And so, did you feel anger as well? I mean, you're talking about guilt, you're talking about fear. What about rage or
well,
anger?
I felt a lot of anger about the teenage things, especially that, because these were men in their 20s who clearly knew that I was not, you know, not even 16. I mean, I was not developed, and I was not the kind of girl that puts on makeup and tries to look like a woman or anything. I was a tomboy, and
right.
they clearly knew that I was a very young, you know, just barely pubescent person. So for them, I did have a lot of disgust and anger that they exploited the situation, that they manipulated me, that they some of them forced me in very humiliating ways. And I did have a lot of anger in general at men who like young girls, you know, like that just in general. So I'd have had to do forgiveness in general toward men about,
mm-hmm.
you know, because in my case, the perpetrators, the predators were male. But I also know I've met many people who have been victimized sexually by women. So I know that there are men and women out there whose issues are with women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't want to say that, you know, we have to all learn to forgive men, because I've heard of mothers committing incest, and I can't, it's just appalling the damage that it does, so.
Right, that's very interesting as well, because we have somebody on the chat room, and he's saying, how do you forgive a woman that lies, saying that you raped her and you didn't, and she's extorting thousands of dollars and et cetera. So this is something very important to state, you know. The abuser not necessarily has to be a man. Mainly, it's like 90% of times there are men doing this, but also women are doing this as well.
Yeah, women can be
different. And an abusive situation is not only that in which the sexual encounter did take place, but also somebody who is maybe psychologically manipulating you. I mean, there really doesn't have to be a sexual contact to be an abusive situation. And
that's
very important for listeners to understand this. We're talking in this case about a sexual abuse, but in general, there are abusive cases in which there are non-sexual encounters and still are abusive situations,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes, and I think it's, you know, it's just to answer how do you forgive someone, period, for anything. I really like to speak to that because it's a hard thing. People get mixed up about forgiveness. They think, and I'm strictly speaking from my own experience, so I'm not an authority, but I found that when people would talk about me forgiving, you have to forgive your father or you have to forgive this person or that person, it bothered me because I felt like they were saying that I had to change the way I felt about what they did. And you don't. If forgiveness is not an emotion. Forgiveness is an action. And what I realized is that forgiveness is not doing what would be just to do, like an eye for an eye. You don't take the eye. You don't punish the person. You don't punish them in any way. That's forgiveness. That doesn't mean you have to like them. It doesn't mean you are going to like feel differently about what they did. You don't have to feel differently about what they did. You can absolutely hate what they did for the rest of your life and say that, you know, doing that is an atrocious thing to do. But you don't have to be, like, all caught up in that, you know. So you just don't punish them and you let go of it and you go, like, okay, yes, I hate it when people touch little children like that. And I think it's wrong, and I think it's unhealthy for children, and I'm going to work to educate people about what to do to prevent it and what to do if it happens, and to try to get pedophiles to understand that what they're doing is harmful and to get help, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But forgiveness
you know, it's a little bit difficult when we're talking because we're not seeing each other, so we really don't
know
when to change the thing. But I wanted to take something from what you said, and it has to do with forgiveness. You were saying that it's very important to understand what forgiveness is. You were saying that you really do not have to forget what happened, and I really think the same way, because if we forgive something that happened, then it can happen again. The idea is to learn from the experience, and for example, in this case, learn to set up boundaries. I remember you said something about learning how to set up boundaries in another interview.
Yes.
Would you like to talk to us about that? I mean,
yes,
taking
boundaries
in yourself.
Boundaries is one of the most important things that I've learned, and what I discovered is that I have a right to be myself. I have a right to protect myself, and I have a right to decide everything about, you know, it's a really wonderful thing when you really get the concept of boundaries, because years ago in 93 when I first talked to a family counselor, and she said to me that I lacked boundaries when it came to myself. I had no idea whatsoever what she was talking about, and it took me years, and it bothered me. It was like, what are boundaries? I don't understand what boundaries are, and how do you set them? And now it's just so simple. It's like, I have the right to say no. It's up to me whether or not I want to talk about something. It's up to me whether or not and when and how much I want to share about something. I don't owe anybody anything. This is, you know, my life, and and I get to be who I choose to be, and I get to like what I like, and I get to not like what I don't like, and nobody can make me do anything. And you don't have to be snotty about it, you know. You just go like, no, I don't want to. No, thank you. You know, when my partner wants to explore some particular sex toy or something, I'm just like, no, thanks. Not that one. You know.
And that's your right?
Huh?
That's a right you have. That's a right you have.
Yeah.
The right of saying no.
That's right. That's what I learned, is that I have the right to like what I like and not like what I don't like, and to say no. And if somebody is going to start trying to manipulate me into doing what they want, they're not going to be in my space anymore. They're going to lose relationship with me, because the more manipulative somebody is, the more I push them, you know, avoid them and say no to them, and, you know, and they're not a part of my world, because I don't tolerate manipulative behavior. It's like, if people can't respect my values and my right to be myself, and they can't respect that, if they're going to put me down and tell me that I'm wrong for feeling the way I feel, or trying to, you know, in any way persuade me to do something they want me to do, and I'm feeling like, you know what, I really don't like the idea of that. I really don't want to do that. And if you can't accept that, then you should go be with somebody who wants to do that. It's that simple. If I have to do something that I really don't want to do in order to keep somebody loving me, I just, you know, I mean, it's a choice everybody makes. It's like, you can choose to compromise, and you can choose to give somebody, say, okay, I'm going to give someone that gift. I'm not really into it, but it's not bad, and I'm going to choose to go ahead and give them that gift. But you don't, you know, it's just a difference. If I happen to have a great relationship with somebody who respects what I'm going through, as far as, like, knows that I have sexual issues, that I am healing, that I have control issues, that I need to set boundaries, and respects when I say no.
You know. Mm-hmm. That's something very important. How do you get to communicate that kind of things to a partner? Because sometimes part of the fear involves losing the other person, right?
Yes. I was mostly, through most of my adult life, I would say, I didn't have this power, and I didn't have these boundaries. I basically just, it was real strange. It was like the counselor asked me, well, what do you want, Karma? Just in general, what do you want? And I was blank. And what came to mind was, it doesn't matter what I want. And I looked at that for years and thought, why do I feel like it doesn't matter what I want? And why do I not know what I want? I didn't even know myself. Because basically I'd just been acquiescing my whole life and doing whatever the man wanted. And that, to me, that was the only way that you could keep a man, because, you know, I mean, my whole experience of men is that this is what they want, and my dad left my mom because, you know, he left her for a hooker and abandoned 6 kids, so it was like sex was like sex and men. Men want sex, and you just have to give them what they want, or they leave, and that was the whole of it. And all of a sudden, I realized, wait a minute, you know, what about me?
Mm-hmm. No. You were talking about your sexual identity. Yeah, how did this work for you previously and afterwards?
Well, like I said before, I didn't even have a sense of self. And whenever the conversation came up about, you know, sex and intimacy and stuff, I ran away from it. I literally was in seminars to try to work through my issues, and would leave the room because I couldn't handle what they were talking about. That's how sensitive I was when I was in my 20s. And I just didn't want to think about or talk about those past experiences. So I was kind of on an unconscious level and just acquiescing and going along. And then all of a sudden, I became frigid and just shut down sexually completely. And after years of just not caring about sex at all, and, you know, I had looked at sexual healing and I didn't want to think about it. And then there came a point when I said, you know what, I'm sick of being sick. I'm sick of having so many issues. I'm sick of being this way. And I want to heal. And so for me, it was a process of within myself looking at my, I did take out each memory in my mind alone, and I didn't have to go talk to anybody about it. I took each memory out in my mind and I examined it, and I didn't back away from it. I looked at it and I said, okay, go ahead and remember it, karma, and look at it. What did you not like? What about this was so horrible? What about this bothers you the most? What, you know, what do you wish had happened? Why? You know, and I really got to know myself. And then I just started paying attention to those signals about, you know, what felt good to me and what didn't. And if something didn't feel good, then I just started, you know, letting the man know that. I just decided to be true to myself and to respect myself. And when you do that, it just starts coming out in your relationships that you expect the other person to care about you and to care about your feelings and to care about your happiness, because that's what love is. And so when you start loving yourself, it just, you talk about, you know, how do you communicate and how do you find yourself? That's basically it. You just start looking at your own experience and getting in touch with it, and you start to forgive yourself. I actually had to forgive myself as a 3-year-old for going in the house. I mean, my mother had taught me not to go with strangers. I remember that. That's a lesson you teach a very young child when you start to let them go into the neighborhood. And I was walking with my little friend to her place, and I went in the house with him. She stayed outside and waited, and when I didn't come back out, she ran home and told my mom, and that's how they found out, and the cops came, and it was a big fiasco. So, you know, I felt guilty that I had brought this whole drama into my family's life, and I felt guilty that I had disobeyed my mother, you know. So I had to forgive myself, too. And I had to forgive myself for being stupid and getting in a car with a guy when I'm walking home from school and he's cute and, you know, and he offers me a ride. I had to forgive myself for being stupid, you know, for hurting myself.
Right. Right. So how was your healing journey, your sexual healing journey? How did it go for you?
It's an ongoing process. It's something I very consciously decided to start in November 2003. It was a very conscious choice. I said, okay, this is it. I'm going to start my sexual healing journey. I wasn't ready to care about it before that, and so I just didn't. But once I got sick of being sick, I said, okay, this is it. I'm going to do it. And I decided that for me, the reason I really didn't want to tackle this thing before was because I didn't want to talk about it. That was the biggest thing that was stopping me. I didn't want to talk about it with anybody. And I was afraid of what counselors might, how they might influence me. I didn't want anybody to influence how I felt or thought about it. So I didn't talk about it to anybody. I just talked about it to myself in my head. And just, like I said, started getting in touch with my experience and loving myself and exploring my body and exploring my mind and exploring my emotions, and just at my own pace started to move through my issues and and examine them and feel my feelings and, you know, just look at all the thoughts and attitudes and beliefs and stuff that had come up about that. And really just it took a lot of hours of just thinking, you know, and I would literally just lay for hours and think.
Did you get any books to start with?
Initially, I had picked up a book at the library, and it is a very good book called The Sexual Healing Journey. I know people can get it at Amazon and other book online books. I'm sorry, I can't remember the author's name right now, but that's the beginning title, The Sexual Healing Journey. And I had picked it up at the library, and I had read just the opening pages and decided that I wasn't ready, and I took that book back to the library. So I never have really read that book. I've read parts of it, and I actually bought it and have it now, and occasionally I pick it up and read through it. The book that helped me the most was, in general, it was called Trauma and Recovery, and that one is by Wendy Maltz, Maltz, Trauma and Recovery. And that is just, in general, talks about how we store memories of traumatic events and the healing process from traumatic events. So I think that book helped me more than anything, you know. But mostly it was just a journey within myself of consciousness and getting to know myself and getting to like myself and respect myself. And then that started to come out in my relationships. And I have to say, I mean, for the first time in my life, honestly, I am in love, and he's in love with me. It is literally the first time I've experienced being in love. And I'm 53 now, and this relationship started a little over 2 years ago. So at age 51, I fell in love for the first time in my life. That's how it affected my life. I was just this unconscious, complicated person. I had counselors in my late 20s. There was a counselor who told me that she wouldn't work with me because I had too many issues. I was like...
But that's wonderful, right, to get there, to actually have a beautiful relationship. I mean, it took you what it took you, but you do have that now, right?
Oh, yeah, and I think, you know, it is. It's just all, it's like all the love songs that you've ever heard in your life, just all of a sudden, it's like they're all there, and you go, oh, now I understand. And I wasn't cynical about love, but I just thought that it was kind of a hoax and that, you know, this is as good as it gets. And you know, and I had very low expectations and very low self-esteem, and that's why I had a bunch of crappy relationships in my 20s and 30s. And it's like about, was it almost 8 years ago that I decided to heal sexually, and it, because I knew it affected my ability to be intimate and trusting and just whole, you know. So it's I'm glad I did, you know. And I know it's harder for people who have a lot more memories and a lot worse memories. I do have friends who have had some pretty severe long-term cases of incest abuse and stuff. But she's also my best friend. She's happily married, and she has a very compassionate husband. And you know, it's something you have to continue to work through. Those, you know, those ugly images pop up in your head from time to time, and you just get better at replacing them, using your imagination to bring you back and to create fantasies that are appealing to you, to push those memories away with fantasies of things that are appealing to you, you know.
Mm-hmm. So we have 5 minutes left, and I would like to ask you two more questions. First of all, did you get to forgive the people who did this, and why did it take you to do this?
I have never personally had a chance face-to-face or even a letter or anything. I don't know their names, and so it's just something I had to do in my own mind for my own self, is just stop. You talk about outrage. Yeah, it's like just going like, you know what? There's no, I'm only hurting myself with continuing to just be upset and bitter and outraged and all that. It's like you can distinguish between, there's a distinction between hating what somebody did and hating the person. And when you realize that every human being is flawed, every human being is doing the best they can at the moment with what they know and what they were born to be. Even the monsters, even the sociopaths, you have to have a little bit of sympathy for the fact that they were born that way. And I don't mean to say that, you know, people aren't responsible for their choices and stuff like that, but everybody makes mistakes, you know. So you just, you know, it helps to just realize that human beings make mistakes, and you know, I realize something is that these men don't understand that they are actually doing the amount of harm that they're doing. So we need to educate each other. I shouldn't say these men. I should say the perpetrators, pedophiles, people who like children, and teens are children. Teens are children. These are not mature people. And it is very, very bad. You know, it has a very, you know, a long-lasting effect. So I just want to educate people about that.
Right. And then my last question, we have 3 minutes left now. You are a parent now. You have a child. I guess he's an adolescent. What would you say to parents about this?
Well, I think one thing I did for my son is I had him take a workshop called Kid Power, which is a self-defense training, and they have them for all age groups. I think it's very important to teach children how to protect themselves, and if you don't know how to do that in a way that isn't scary, in an appropriate way, then, you know, look for programs that can help with that. It's very important to teach children that there are predators out there and how to protect themselves. But when they're very young, it's a lot of times parents don't know how to do that. But I think the Kid Power program is the best thing I've ever come across. It's also very important to, you know, as your children get older, I've had to have talks with my son about the fact that, you know, pictures on the internet that are of people under the age of 18, that is child pornography, that is against the law, and it's a federal, you know, it's a felony. So if he see, you know, to tell him if you see that stuff, to report it. You just basically have to educate children at the various stages of their growth about this. And
Now you are an advocate for children. You are writing epic novels. You are the writer of Sardu.
Yes, I've always been a writer since I was quite young, and it came out, I just realized through this whole process that I really have a heart for childhood and preserving childhood and protecting children and making childhood this sacred, special time that it can be and should be for all children. So I decided that the protagonist in my science fiction series would be a child. And it's just been a lot of fun to write. A lot of adults have liked the stories as well. It's been a great way for me to express a lot of just general issues about childhood and how